I will give you, guarantee you, paradise. The fool says, when? The wise man say, let me see what you got to offer. Tell me more. I would like to study this. Huh? So God says, why not, you wise men? Why not research the Quran? Obviously, the Western world took up that invitation and researched the Quran. I know the fools right now among us are within my hearing range, the hearing range of my voice. They're saying, oh, the man is so far-fetched in his claims. I saw once men come out and stop the downtown traffic on a business day. They had to reroute the traffic on a business day. Look at here. They will make an expressway. They will set times for the movement of traffic on that expressway, whether it goes north or south or slow or fast, or whether four lanes are used or two. They will do all of these things to favor the rich, the business people in the center of the city. They'll reroute. The traffic. If the business people who come and work there report that they don't like to stop in your neighborhood on your corner and wait for the light to change, but you stand at them, they will say, okay, we will fix it so you don't have to stop in their neighborhood. We will make an expressway. You won't even see them. Now, they can do all of these things to favor the rich, the money maker. Huh? But I saw the traffic rerouted on a business day because men wanted to parade. White men. They weren't black. Although there are some blacks too. They wanted to parade their Moroccan-looking hats and show off crescents. And the word Medina and Mecca and Allah, etc. And I remember as a youngster in these United States during World War II, just immediately thereafter, seeing in the paper where Truman had greeted some people, Assalamu alaikum. The fact is that the Western society has for long been studying Quran, Islamic knowledge, Islamic history, and extracting from it for their own benefit. That's right. That's the fact. That's right. And they call it secret order. Secret order. That's a fact. And I heard when they really get up in the high degrees, they stop saying hello and goodbye. They say assalamu alaikum and wa alaikum assalam among themselves in private. That's what we are told. And that they stop reading the Bible and they start studying the Quran. That's what we are told. Then the black man come into the order, the secret order, and has to send way over to Europe to get in it. This is history. Am I right or wrong? This is history. Black people appeal to the white order of the Shriners and Masons, to get in, to come into that secret order. They didn't accept them, just like at first the church didn't accept them. So determined to get in, a black man, as a spokesman for the rest of the blacks, that wanted to get in the order, he wrote to the order, the home-based order in Europe, and asked them to give him a charter to practice the same secret doctrine in these United States. And they granted the charter to him to practice that secret doctrine in these United States. Now, you know, if the white man right here living with him wouldn't let him come in, but would accept that he get a charter from over there and be in his own thing, you know, if the white man that wouldn't let him in wasn't disturbed by him getting a charter, that white man must have known that the charter didn't carry the same weight or offer the same opportunity that the laws of the white man offer. And that's another fact. We follow the white man and buy substitutes and remain inferior to him all the time. But all we have to do is trust God and stop letting white man and his establishment guide you into the secret knowledge. Trust God, and God will bless your intellect. If you're good at heart, he will bless your intellect to see the light. And then their pride, their glory, will appear to you as foolishness. And that's why God says in the Quran, what they're doing is nothing but sport and play, game making. And in another place in the Quran, Allah says, and their meetings in secret, meaning their cult meetings, their meeting in secrecy, is mostly for no good. Then God tells the believers that you are not permitted to have any secret meetings unless the purpose of it is to advance the good, righteousness and justice. You can't meet in no secrecy to get over on somebody else, to have a strategy to get over on people. No, that's forbidden to Muslims. That's why here recently, the Supreme Council of Saudi Arabia put the Shriners out of Arabia. They're not there anymore. So you go on filling knuckles and talking your talking and staying behind everybody else and watching the world leave you. We know where we are. We're going ahead. We have power. Yes, because we are with Allah. Because we are with the truth. We have power and protection of God. So seeking of God's face, what is it? God tells us in the Quran, if we can understand. God said, and turn your faces all to that house. Say, oh, then, the face of God, is the face of God there where all of you are turning? No. How do we know? How do we know that? Because God says, in whichsoever way you turn your face, there you will find the countenance of God. So God is not limited to any one direction. Wherever you turn, God is there. He's not like you, limited. But nevertheless, he told us all to turn our faces toward that house. And he says, and whoever turns his face toward that house, seeking him, he shall find him. He shall find him there. So God said, you find me here in the Kaaba. When you make your heart and be sincere, seeking me, seeking an audience with me, you will find me here in the Kaaba. But at the same time, he says, whichever way you turn your face there, you'll find me. So it must not mean the actual face of God is there, but it means that if you follow this discipline, if you follow the wisdom of this orientation, you will be answering God's purpose. Why has man yearned to see the face of God? To know what God thinks, to know what God wants, to know what God feel, so we can look at his face and know whether we are okay with him or not. When we've hurt our friend, we want to see our friend's faces. Huh? Hey, when you hurt your friend, you want to see your friend's face. That's if you want to be right with your friend. And you ain't satisfied. Say, I won't be satisfied until I can see his face. You can send a word by somebody else. Say, tell him I didn't mean to do what I did. Tell him I ain't that low down. I just got caught up into something. And they say, hey, man, he said, forget about it. Everything's okay. You ain't satisfied until you see your friend's face. Man's yearning to see the face of his God. He says face, not as a face like this, not as a physical face. He says face, what he want to see is God's intent, God's position, God's position regarding the problems of life, sinners, etc. I want to see what God says about me. I'm tired of hearing what these liars say about me. The man say, hey, I don't trust no preacher no more. I don't trust any preacher anymore. I don't want to hear what you got to say, preacher. Shut up! I want to see God's face. I want to know what God think about me. You ain't my maker. The yearning is there. So God says, whoever follows this orientation, he promises you'll have an audience with him. He will be present there. Direct your face there. You'll be looking at the Kibla, the Kaaba, the first house built for all humanity by the prophets. Prophets Abraham and his son Ishmael, peace be upon them. But in that house, in its symbol, is the great sign of the unity, purpose of man. His orientation for success on this earth. All locked up in that wonderful symbol, there in that simple house. So if man will accept that and live by that discipline in his life, God promises you'll see me. That's my faith. That's what I'm pleased with. That's what God is saying. That's what I'm pleased with. That's what I've established for you. That's the destiny I want to see you seeking. That's the overriding discipline I want you to have in your life. That will never be sacrificed. No matter what you turn to outside of that, let that rule in your life. That you all are created of one essence, one origin, and that God has evolved your social life. He's the best to evolve your social life. That he has ignited your intellect. He's the best to ignite your intellect. That he has provided a community and a safe community in a situation that's almost impossible for life. You think you have to go to an oasis where there's plenty of vegetation, or to a place where there's great life, great abundance of life? You think you have to go to a paradise where there's just this abundance of life and perfect comfort and everything? No, look what I have done. I have provided a place of safety to preserve the social order, to keep the intellect. Out of this came a man with the wisdom to lead all men. He's called the father of nations, Abraham. Then he made him a leader for all the nations. Said, look what he did. He came to a place that was not appealing at all and built a house in a barren land, in a desert, among wanderers. Huh? In the midst of wanderers, pirates of the sand. But the house still stands. The wisdom is preserved. The light is protected. It still invites the civilization. And it sends men off to return to their distant lands with a better footing, with more wisdom to use to advance their life, no matter what quarter of the earth they live in. Still there, in the sand. Then God says in his holy book, Ya ayyuhan nafsul mutma'inna, O soul that has found rest, irji ila rabbiki radiyatan mardiyah. Return now to your Lord, pleasing and please. See, some of us want to be pleased, but we don't want to please. Huh? What are you going to do for me? What are you going to do for me? Well, hell, what are you going to do for me? We want happiness, but we don't want to contribute to nobody else's happiness. Then look what God says. Fadkhuli fi ibadi wadkhuli jannati. God says, now therefore, enter you among my workers. Hey, I thought when you get to heaven, you're going to play on a harp and wear silk and drink milk and honey. I didn't know there was any work. God says, come into my paradise, but first accept to enter among my workers. He says, let the huli be a badi. Enter you among my workers. Wet the huli jannati. And enter you my paradise. So the condition for getting into his paradise is to be one of his workers. Woo-hoo! Buddy, buddy, buddy. Now you know how come I know that's right? My nature bears witness. Well, hell, I can shut my mouth. And man, there's so much amen going on all through my genes. My nature knows that's right. When I have a task to take up, when I have a challenge to take up, when I have a job to do, when I have something that will make me feel that I made a little progress today because I at least planted two trees. I dug up two roots that was troubling the house that was about to damage the piping. I can go to sleep and I rest good. My sleep is heavenly because I know in my soul I have been a credit to somebody, to something today. Because I have done something to improve the situation of life. Huh? Yeah. So here's somebody selling the ignorant masses in these cities on the south side of Chicago and the west side of Chicago, all in these backward corners of the city, selling the ignorant masses, whether they be black or Puerto Rican or whatever, selling them on the idea that God invites you to a heaven where you don't have to do nothing else. You just lay up and just float and drink honey and milk and somebody fanning you. Well, it ain't fair that the fanner is in heaven. Well, hell, he ought to be in hell if he doesn't deserve the same thing I got. And they got somebody up there fanning others. So seeking the face of God clearly means seeking what your Lord Allah established for you, for us, as an assignment in this real world. As work, as a preferred way of life. And believe me, when we involve ourselves in such and strive, we find happiness. Especially, as God says, when we do it seeking His okay, seeking His face. Seeking his approval. Now we have gone way over time, but we ain't renting. Yeah, we big shots in this place. Because of the efforts of the little shots. A lot of effort on the part of many little shots have made us a big shot in this place. We investigated the call to Islam or Al-Islam because we yearn to find ourselves. We yearn to find God's way. We yearn to find what God approved. And we weren't really satisfied with what the white man had established for us as religion. So we answered the invitation to come into Islam, or Al-Islam as it is called in the Quran. Don't you know we were among the people who were trying to find religious freedom? The African-American people, they don't understand, most of them, the nature of their own freedom struggle. Their freedom struggle got corrupted. It was corrupted by new spirit. Foreign spirit came into the black man in these United States. A spirit foreign to that freedom urge that he had naturally during his experience as a slave. When the Hebrew children were in bondage and they had no power, no nation to turn to that was Hebrew. They had no one to answer them, no one to defend them, no one to take up their cause. And they were oppressed by a mighty ruler and a mighty nation. What was the natural course for their freedom urge? Call on the mysterious God. Mysterious because they didn't know him. Mysterious because they didn't have the knowledge in their hands. If they did, they wouldn't have been in those circumstances. So their only recourse was to cry out to the mysterious God. And they cried out to the mysterious God, and the mysterious God took a man that he had planted in Egypt. Huh? God planted one of the Hebrews, one of the oppressed Hebrews. He planted him in Egypt, put him right under the power structure. Of the imperialists, the colonizers, who had colonized the land of the Hebrews. And had them living so bad in their own little territory that was there, that they saw no opportunity for improving their situation, but to ask God to bless one of their children to get in the favorable situation under the Pharaoh in the palace. But what happened when God blessed one of our men to be favored? He makes a fancy speech, bathed in his own glory, and look for a bigger payday. Go seeking a bigger check. Not a change of life. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about the Reverend Jesse Jackson. God bless him to win popularity and acceptance, to address the nation from the same dignified position that the bosses have. Huh? But instead of getting the revelation and coming down off the high tower of his bosses and say, I'm going to embrace my brother in the street and I'm going to show my brother how to rise up to your height. Instead of doing that, he starts seeking an opportunity to get a bigger payday. I mean currency. Isn't that what he did? Started looking in Chicago, couldn't find any, looked down south. I think he's still looking for a position to give him more money by the week or the month or however he will be paid. That's how come we're still down. Now, I just mentioned the Reverend Jesse Jackson. He's one in a long history of Dathans who get a good situation in the land that oppresses. And when he's comfortable, he forgets that he is from among the suffering. He's just a long line. He just comes from a long line of similar type people, opportunists. But that was God's way. God planted him there. And he served Pharaoh until he couldn't stomach it anymore. It wasn't intended that he serve Pharaoh. It was intended that he be put in a situation to help his own people. So he served Pharaoh until he couldn't stomach it anymore. Then he started rebelling. He said, hey, what is this? Hey, what are you doing there? What are you doing hitting that Hebrew?
Now, he's a Hebrew, too. He's speaking to an Egyptian. He's telling one of the white supremacists, "Hey, what are you doing hitting that Negro?" And he couldn't check him by bringing his attention to his wrong, so he hauled off and smacked him upside his head. Pow! And that kind of liberty that Moses took got him put out of Egypt. Say, "Hey, you got to get out of here with this stuff you got here, boy. You don't belong with us. Get out of here." They exiled him. They put him out in the desert, right? He got out there in the desert and met a wise man. The wise man turned him on to the way of God. Then he got inspired. He said, "Hey, I think I see fire." So I think I'll go there to the fire. Maybe I'll bring back something that will serve as a light or something as heat for you. And after he had that experience, he went back to Pharaoh. Said, "Hey, I thought we put you out of here. Didn't we exile you some time ago? What are you doing here?" Said, "God says, let my people go." "Hey, what you joking or something, Moses? We know you. Don't you know you are our boy?" "Say, who is this God you're talking about?" "The only God I know is myself." That's what Pharaoh told him. "Say, who is this God you're talking about, Moses? The only God I know is myself." "Said, but do you give life and give death?" Pharaoh said, "Yeah, I give life and give death. If you don't straighten up, I'm getting ready to kill you right now." "Now, who's this God you're talking about?" "Say, the one who created everything and thereafter gave it its guidance." And Pharaoh, he got shook in, you know. "Hey, what's this? This boy looked like he had met something else. He ain't the same fella that left here." "Say, hey, I'm going to tell you again. God said, let my people go." "Say, are you threatening me, Moses?" "Yeah." "Say, God said, he's going to take your firstborn if you don't let my people go." Then he presented him with one threat after another, right? And the God he served backed Moses up. He sent him and he backed him up. Pretty soon, Pharaoh, he lost his cool. And he organized his men to battle with Moses and his followers. And as a consequence, he was drowned in the sea. Right? That's great history that we just mentioned in brief here. Great history. Great history. Now, dear beloved people, we in these United States, the true yearning for freedom in us is a yearning for religious freedom. And instead of getting that religious freedom, we were fascinated so much, enchanted so much, enamored so much with the hope of being accepted by our rejectors. You know, pimps and other playboys and pretty boys that make a business out of romancing women, they know that the way to get a woman hooked is to reject her for no reason that she can find. And she will be tied up forever trying to find out how come I'm not wanted. She'll have her forever. She ain't gonna rest until she win him. Cause she's rejected but don't know why. Yeah, I'm fine. I know I'm fine. I know I whipped him on, whipped it on him right. How come he won't come around? And he's pushing her off. Hey, no, leave me alone. So the experience we have with the white man had the power to produce the same kind of thing in us. White man rejected us, and we don't know why. Why do you treat us like this? Why are we so offensive to him? Why is our flesh so offensive to him? We're human like he is. How come he becomes so upset just by our presence? Why he doesn't even want us drinking out of the same water fountain with him? Bird come up there and drink out of the fountain. He go there and drink behind the bird. I drink out of the fountain. They lynch one of us and take the fountain up and throw it away. So he put a big question in your mind. Why in the hell do I provoke you to go to these extremes? You got false notions about me, man. Let me hug you. Feel me. I'm just like somebody else. I'm just like anybody else. Come on, kiss me. Come on, please, kiss me. I'm just like somebody, anybody else. Tongue me. I'm just like anybody else. Let's have sex. You see, I'm just like anybody else. Hey, let's have a baby. You see, we can have a baby. I'm just like anybody else. Don't run. Let me sit by you in the park. I'm just like anybody else. Hey, where you going? Don't leave. I'm just like anybody else. Hey, you don't know what these things can do to your soul and to your nature and your spirit. So we want to prove ourselves to him, huh? We want to prove ourselves. And then what happens now? We have a yearning to be religiously free. We want to find religious freedom. Then he opened the church to us, and we walked into the doors, and there is the image of him saying, come unto me. That's some powerful psychology that this civilization used on non-whites. Push them away, say they're black, they're colored, they're inferior. But now come into my church, I have an image of me there that wants you. Come unto me. So all you wanted to do to white women and white men, you go in there and do it to Jesus. Oh, Jesus! Oh, that's Jesus! Oh, Jesus! Jesus! You see the psychologist? You see the psychologist? See, you can take an animal, and make an image, an effigy of a person. And you can take that image and torture and tantalize, et cetera, that animal with that image. And then take that animal to the person they never saw, never smelled anything. And that animal will go at that person. So the person you want to accept you is the white man. The image of him is the so-called God, Jesus. God forbid. So your yearning, your desperate need to be accepted by the white man is kind of vicariously satisfied through your experience with the Jesus on the cross. Nothing but an emblem, a symbol of the white man's race. So how come you can't find your freedom? How come you can't be free? How come you ain't comfortable with what you are, with who you are? How come you haven't found yourself? It is because you haven't carried your freedom urge to its proper conclusion. You need to go back and pick up your freedom struggle.
Your freedom struggle was not to have money and cat-like cars and Mercedes-Benz and fine clothes to show off with the white man in the business suit, or to have power in the army, et cetera, et cetera. That wasn't your yearning. Your yearning was to find a comfortable place for your soul. Your yearning was to free your soul. Your yearning was for religious freedom. You wanted to know your God, what he approved, what he disapproved. You wanted to hear from your God if what the white man was doing was right or wrong. You wanted to hear from God. You wanted to find God so you can judge what the white man has established. But instead of finding God, you found nothing but a comfortable place with a cold image, nothing but a marble image of the white man. Or plastic or wooden, I don't know what they're making the images in now. And there you rested your religious struggle. End it with Jesus. Oh, I got Jesus now. I don't need anything else. I understand why. But you still need something. You just can't see the depths of your life. You're in the shallow. In the shallow, you think you don't need anything. But the depths are still troubled, not rested. And won't be rested until you find religious freedom. And the only religious freedom for non-white people in this particular society is to come into a religion that is not imaged in the white man. That's the only way. We ain't gonna never be free. Church used to be all so sincere. You always have sincere people in religion. But the leadership of the black church or the African-American church or the black church now is corrupt. It's corrupt. Like it's nothing but a mockery. So we have been yearning for religious freedom. This is the course God intended for us, to bring us back to establishment, community life and community establishment, after being taken from establishment when we were brought here as slaves. Are taken from the opportunity to establish ourselves when we were brought here as slaves. Many of us were brought from dignified life. We know of certain slaves that were brought and sold on slave blocks, auction blocks. It's documented by history that certain ones of them came from educated backgrounds and good situations, good, fortunate situations. And they were sold just like all the other slaves on the auction block. Religious freedom is our yearning. You who are still with us here, you are here because you believe that this place is the best opportunity for that religious freedom. But that religious freedom for you will not be a reality if you leave responsibility for your religious community life to people that you don't even know. Most of you still trust me, and you depend solely upon me to keep the order of your community or your religious life. I can't do that. That's too much for any human being. The prophet himself, peace be upon him, he was told by God to tell the people, I am not to be a protector of your life, a regulator of your affairs, a guardian for your interests. No, the prophet was not sent to do that. He's told by God in the Quran to tell them that I have no responsibility but to make the message clear. clear. That's what the prophet was told. If he would have accepted that responsibility, he would have deviated from the course of his own prophethood. Because he came to lead the people into shared community life, shared responsibility, shared authority, shared power. He came to lead the people into the ideal democracy. Yes. So God gave him the words to tell them, no, I won't accept that you burden me with all this responsibility. You have to accept responsibility. You have to accept responsibility for your own life. Don't worry. I don't do this often. This is very important. We don't have in the history of Prophet Muhammad where Prophet Muhammad was going about checking on people. We don't have in the history of Prophet Muhammad where Prophet Muhammad was trying to get all of the business in his control. We don't have in the history of Prophet Muhammad where Prophet Muhammad was trying to ascertain what was going on in all the locales, in all the towns, so he could have control over the life of the people. We only have an issue of Prophet Muhammad where he gave advice when it was asked outside of the regular job of his prophethood when he was inspired to speak to the people. When he wasn't inspired to speak to the people, he was just like a common neighbor. He worked with his wife in the house. He swept the house. He swept in front of the house. He did chores. He went to the market to get groceries for the household. He was seen carrying on the common life of everybody else. How could he do that and be the man that he was, the leader that he was? Because he was sent to bring about a truly participatory democracy where people accept responsibility for their own circumstances, apply the light of God, apply the wisdom of God, and don't expect the man who gave it to you from the mouth of God to be right there with you by your side, watching you and treating you like you're a damn baby, don't know how to take care of your own circumstances. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a prophet. I don't even claim to be a majestic. I dropped the issue a long time ago. I'm a leader because you chose me. I'm a leader because you want me. I'll stay a leader because you want me. Yes, you can retire me by not wanting me. You can retire me. I have no guarantee from heaven. Yes. But I speak with the wisdom that was revealed to the prophet, and I speak in defense of the order of life and society intended for Muslims with the wisdom revealed to the prophet, and I say to you just as the prophet would say to you, I'm not here to watch all of your interests, to protect all of your investments, to preside over all of your disputes. I'm not God, I'm a human being. And God presented this kind of democratic participatory democracy to the Muslims so that the Muslims will be a competing force Not only that, but a leading force for excellence on this earth, a model community for all other communities. But they failed, and God warned them, see? Allah says in the Quran, if you fail, he will raise up behind you another people who will accept this responsibility. Saying they will not, they will be a strong people, they will be a faithful people to God, and they won't fear the criticism of the public criticizer. There are men and nations who have taken up that invitation. I believe in the heart of Khomeini, he feels he really has accepted that invitation. And perhaps in the hearts of certain other leaders, they feel they have accepted that invitation. But for the most